So I do have to say that, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but my week has been so hectic. I'm not used to preaching multiple weekends in a row. And on top of that, I signed myself up to be on staff for youth camp next week for high schoolers. A little bit scared. But yeah. Yeah, we're not going there. And so this week, while I was preparing the sermon for tonight, I was also getting my sermon and PowerPoint ready for next week, because I'm going to be at camp until Thursday. And I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm supposed to have my PowerPoint sent to the media team by Thursday night. And so that makes it a little, there's this wedge of time there where, oh my goodness, I just wasn't going to be able to do that at camp. I know enough about high schoolers to know that that was not going to happen. So the reason I'm going to be with the high schoolers is because my two oldest kids are going to be at camp as well. Charlie, she's going into fifth grade. Marcus is going into sixth grade. So Charlie's going to be in the kids' camp, going into fourth and fifth. Marcus is going to be in the middle school camp. I didn't want to be helicopter mom at camp, and I know that I would. I wouldn't be able to be an effective counselor if I'm going, no, don't do that. So I went, okay, high school's where I'm going to be, even though I don't know. So I will report back next week on how that goes. But I've got to say that having this hecticness that I've had today, I went to a birthday party today. I forgot a handful of things at home as I was leaving to come to church, as well as we had a small accident. People with small children will understand how that goes. And so we had to turn around, go home. We got all the way to Cornelius Pass, turned around, went home, picked up the things that I forgot, changed some britches, and got on our way. And I came in this evening just in a rushed, hectic, chicken with my head cut off kind of way, you know? It feels like this entire week has just kind of bubbled over on a Saturday. And I was sitting there as Dan and Georgine were up here getting ready for that first song, and I was thinking, oh, Lord, I need a push. I feel like I'm going to get up there and stumble through my sermon and not do it any sort of good service at all. And in that first song, it says, because when we see you, we find strength to face the day. In your presence, all our fears are washed away. And I just sat there going, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Because he's always there. He's always good when we need him. Even when we don't need him, he's there. Well, when we think we don't need him is what I'm going to say. But yeah, so last week, as those who were here would know, we covered chapters 1 and 2 of Esther, which we found out that King Xerxes likes to party a lot. Queen Vashti is quite a bad mamma jamma who had no problem telling her king no, which I think is pretty awesome. And we also found out that I really like the name Hadassah. I think Michael's grateful we did not have another girl child. Yes. Now, I would like to hope that you guys took the chance to read chapters 3 through 6 of Esther. If you didn't, that's fine. I get it. Life gets busy. I'm very aware of that. But as we pick up our story in chapter 3, Esther is now the queen. You know, she's chosen out of all these young girls. She is now queen. The first thing that happens in chapter 3 is King Xerxes promotes a man by the name of Haman. Haman is introduced as Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which is a mouthful. Okay, so small history lesson here, by the way. Esther takes place shortly after 500 BC, which means it's in the 400s, because BC they were counting down, by the way. I had to explain that to someone this week, and it was a very interesting moment. It doesn't make sense, but it does. And shortly before 1000 BC, Saul, we know King Saul, right? So he got himself into a little bit of trouble with God. Actually, in 1 Samuel 15, Samuel's telling Saul that God would like him to go and eradicate an enemy that they have. Well, the enemy was the Amalekites. I always have to stop and look at that word because it's not, it doesn't really resonate in my brain, Amalekite. I don't know. It sounds like a rock. And their king, Agag. So God said, go dispatch these guys, all of them. Well, Saul attacks and he decides to spare King Agag's life against God's will. What do we know about people that go against God's will? We know a lot, actually. Jonah, he was swallowed by a whale because he didn't go where God told him to do. To go. So Haman ends up being the descendant of this, or coming from this line of the Agagites, King Agag, Agag. That's another one, I'm telling you. I know that I pronounce all of these wrong. But this is where Haman and his father come from. These people are the enemy of the Jews, the enemy of God. And King Xerxes has just promoted this guy after making Esther queen. Now, obviously, King Xerxes probably knows none of this. He's Persian, and apparently back then, the Persians, their king kind of thought of themselves as a god. They wanted, that's what, when you bowed to the Persian king, you were honoring him in the same way you would honor God. So I'm guessing that King Xerxes didn't know a whole lot about the god. Now, the Amalekites slash Agagites stayed the enemies of the Jews throughout the generations. Haman gets promoted to the point where he is above all of the other princes in the land and decides that what he needs is for everyone to bow when he goes by. We're bowing in Persia again. Now, most people were bowing. They had no problem. They're like, okay, yep, you're big, high-to-do guy. But Mordecai does not. And we remember Mordecai. He is the cousin of Esther, right? He's raised her. She thinks of him like a father. Well, he's not bowing to Haman. And some members of the guard see this and they're like, oh, he's supposed to be bowing to Haman. We should probably tell him. Those guys were tattletales. So Haman hears about Mordecai not bowing to him. And this guy flies into a rage. Think back to King Xerxes dismissing Queen Vashti. He is angry, right? And he's thinking, how dare this Mordecai guy not show me the respect that I deserve? Haman knows that Mordecai's a Jew. He finds that out from these soldiers as well. And Haman is angry enough at Mordecai that he decides it's not enough to just take out Mordecai. He wants to take out all the Jews. Another thing we know, mass genocide, never a good idea. Just don't do it. So Haman kind of bides his time a little bit. You know, he's watching. He's looking for the right opportunity when he can go ahead and just wipe out an entire people living in Persia. An entire people. In the 12th year of the king Xerxes, he finally kind of hits upon an idea. Now, remember back to chapters 1 and 2. It wasn't until the 4th year that Queen Esther actually came to King Xerxes, and he decided this is the one. So this is like an 8-year span where Esther has been queen. It doesn't tell us what happens in that span, which I think it's a little interesting. I really would like to know. I'm also really nosy like that. But it makes you wonder if I'm the type of person that I wonder, you know, was she happy? You know, did she just go about her daily life? It is said that she still is in touch with Mordecai. Like, on a daily basis, she is communicating with him because he's the man that raised her. So, in the 12th year of the reign of King Xerxes, Haman's like, okay, I got it. In Esther 3, 5 to 11, it says, when Haman saw that Mordecai would not bow down or show him respect, he was filled with rage. He had learned of Mordecai's nationality, so he decided it was not enough to lay hands on Mordecai alone. Instead, he looked for a way to destroy all the Jews throughout the entire empire of Xerxes. So in the month of April, during the 12th year of King Xerxes' reign, lots were cast in Haman's presence. The lots were called Purim, to determine the best day and month to take action. And the day selected was March 7th, nearly a year later. Then Haman approached King Xerxes and said, there's a certain race of people scattered throughout all the provinces of your empire who keep themselves separate from everyone else. Their laws are different from those of any other people, and they refuse to obey the laws of the king. So it is not in the king's interest to let them live. If it pleases the king, issue a decree that they be destroyed, and I will give 10,000 large sacks of silver to the government administrators to be deposited in the royal treasury. The king agreed, confirming his decision by removing his signet ring from his finger and giving it to Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. The king said, the money and the people are both yours to do with as you see fit. Now, Haman, as you may have picked up, is the antagonist of our story. And he has just bribed the king into committing mass genocide. The 10,000 large sacks that they talk about are 10,000 talents, which, by the way, a talent is a unit of measurement. It's not, you know, I can juggle. I cannot juggle, by the way. And it ended up being equal to about 375 tons of silver. 375 tons. I can't even imagine 1 ton of silver. That amount just blows my mind. Now, that's not just a little bit of a bribe. That's a really big bribe. So, Haman basically signs this law into being using the king's signet ring. And Mordecai finds out and begins to grieve. He's grieving for himself. He's grieving for his people. When Esther hears that Mordecai is outside the palace gates grieving, she sends a servant to talk to him and find out why he is so upset. Through a series of messages sent back and forth through the servant, Mordecai tells Esther about the law to kill all the Jews. See, the law that he passed gets sent to all of the provinces that are in Persia, saying, on this day, kill all the Jews. They used a lot more words. This is what boils it down to. They always used a lot more words. But Mordecai asks Queen Esther to speak with the king. And she tells him that if she does that without being requested by the king first, he's going to punish her. He might kill her. Because that's what it was. If you went before the king and he didn't say, oh yeah, sure, you can come talk to me, you're dead. You know, kiss your wife and kids goodbye. That's it. Mordecai eventually does convince Queen Esther. And she tells him that she would like to have him and their fellow Jews fast for 3 days, and she and her servants will do the same. You okay, Greta? And then she's gonna go to the king. Ha. So the Jews have fasted for 3 days. Queen Esther then goes to the king. Now, she's probably terrified. You know, I would bet she got all dressed up nice. She's like, okay, if I'm gonna go to the king, I'm gonna look nice. He seems to like that. Let's go. Shaking in her royal slippers. Slippers are more comfortable. What happens, though, when Esther gets to the king, he tells her that he's pleased that she came to see him. I can just imagine, like, Esther going, oh, you know, on the inside with relief. I'm certain she didn't do it on the outside. She was a queen. Not only is he pleased that she came to see him, he says, I'm so pleased, I will give you anything you want in the kingdom. Anything. She chooses at that moment not to talk to him about Mordecai. She could have. She could have gone straight away and said, well, since you're going to give me anything, don't kill my people. But the thing is that up until that point, Esther hadn't told King Xerxes that she was a Jew. So he doesn't know. He doesn't know that he has just signed her death warrant and the death warrant for those that she loves. So she doesn't tell him about Mordecai. Instead, what she says is, you know, I would like you and Haman to come to a banquet prepared by me. Haman, obviously, like, through the roof, his mind is blown. The queen has just invited me to dinner. Oh, my goodness. Freaking out. I picture him being like, yeah, going to dinner with the queen and the king. I don't know, he's an oily kind of guy. But so Haman goes home after the king has said, well, sure, yep, Haman and I will go to dinner with you. Haman goes home. He brags to his wife. He brags to his friends about the fact that he alone has been invited to this dinner with the king and the queen. You know, she thinks so highly of me that we're going to dinner. Now, Haman and the king go to dinner with Queen Esther. And the king says, now, what do you really want? She's like, well, I'll tell you what I really want if you come to dinner tomorrow, too. I gotta give it to King Xerxes. Most people would not have said, sure, I'll come to dinner tomorrow. They'd have said, how about you just tell me what you really want? He does have a little patience. I'll give him that. I think maybe over 12 years, he learned it somewhere along the way. Maybe he learned it from Esther. Who knows? But they agree to go to dinner again. After dinner, Haman goes home. He's like, yeah, she's invited me to dinner with her and the king again. But it means nothing because Mordecai is still alive. This guy holds a grudge. not even a grudge worth holding, by the way. Now, his wife and his friends say, this is what you should do. Set up a sharpened pole 75 feet tall and ask the king if you can impale Mordecai on it in the morning. Haman really liked that idea, which most normal people wouldn't. And so he says, okay, let it be so. His servants are doing what he's bid. You know, set up this pole, sharpened pole. We are going to make a Mordecai kebab. That is the end of chapter 5. So this is where we are. I have one more chapter for you guys tonight, which is chapter 6. But as of right now, Haman is still angry and bitter. Mordecai, well, he's grieving still, is my guess, because it doesn't say whether he really stops grieving before this point. Now, chapter 6, our final chapter this week, starts with the king being unable to sleep after the banquet with Esther and Haman. He decides to do a little bit of light reading. I say light reading. He has a servant bring him the book of his reign, which at this point is 12 years long. He's going through it, and he reads about Mordecai stopping the attempt on his life that we heard about last week. And he asks his attendants, this Mordecai guy, he saved my life. What have we done for him? What was done for Mordecai? It doesn't say in this book. And they said, well, nothing. Was there supposed to be? The king at that point, it's interesting to me because in the book of Esther, it jumps from the attendants have said, well, nothing, and then the king is asking who's out there in the court. I'm guessing he heard a noise. I don't know. But he asks who's out in the outer court. The attendants tell him that it's Haman. Surprise, surprise. In the wee hours of the morning, because he could not wait. Haman really wanted to skewer Mordecai. The king tells his attendants to bring Haman in. And he asks Haman, what we get then is Esther 6, verses 6 through 10. So Haman came in, and the king said, what should I do to honor a man who truly pleases me? Now Haman thought to himself, whom would the king wish to honor other than me? So he replied, if the king wishes to honor someone, he should bring out one of the king's own royal robes, as well as a horse that the king himself has ridden, one with the royal emblem on its head. Let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials, and let him see that the man whom the king wishes to honor is dressed in the king's robe and led through the city square on the king's horse. Have the official shout as they go, this is what the king does for someone he wishes to honor. Excellent, the king says to Haman. Quick, take the robes and my horse and do just as you have said for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the gate of the palace. Leave out nothing you have suggested. I would be willing to bet that the look on Haman's face right then was absolutely priceless. Like, to be a fly on the wall at that moment, too bad cameras were not invented at that point. I feel like that one would have been passed through the generations. It would have been a good one. He's thinking that he's hot stuff. He's about to get everything he could want. He's having dinner with the king and queen. He's going to have Mordecai skewered. He's going to ride through the city square on one of the king's own horses in the king's robe. And then the bomb drops. Now, Haman does what is asked. He gets the rope, he gets the horse, he gets Mordecai, and he parades him through the city. At this point, Haman has to be absolutely seething with rage. He wants this guy dead. He wants him dead. He wants his family dead. He wants anyone he's ever met dead. That's where he's at. He is angry. So he goes home, not only angry, but humiliated. Because I bet some of his friends were in the square watching as he had to lead Mordecai through the town square, shouting about how great he is. Ow. Now, Haman tells his wife and friends that he had to do this. You know, he had to parade Mordecai. Oh, it was awful. His wife and friends at this point show a tiny glimmer of reason and say, what you have planned is never going to work. It seems like a bad idea. Before they could figure anything out to do to Mordecai, the king's attendants come and take Haman away for dinner. That brings us to the end of chapter 6. We are left with Haman going to dinner with Queen Esther and King Xerxes. Now, through this chunk, you know, Esther goes to the king, knowing he could get angry, knowing he could kill her. She looked death in the face, and she held her head high, and she did her duty to her people. I believe that her courage in that moment is beyond inspiring. I can't think of too many times in my life when I have looked death in the face, much less been able to look death in the face and hold my head high. I'm a chicken. I'll admit that. I am a big chicken. She could have chosen to ignore Mordecai. She could have gone about her life. She's queen now. She doesn't have to pay attention to Mordecai. But that's not what she did. She chose to be an example to all of her people. The people who knew her know that she's a Jew. And now she's queen. They know, my guess is that they probably thought that she would go ahead and pretend she wasn't a Jew. And up until that point, she just hadn't said anything. I don't know if she was still practicing as a Jew, praying when she was supposed to. We don't know. I bet she was. From what we know of Esther, she was a good, obedient girl. Did she want to marry the king? Probably not. He had already had a queen. I'm guessing he's at least twice her age, if not more. She had a full life ahead of her. But instead of turning tail and going, yeah, nope, you guys can just pretend I wasn't ever here, she still went to be counted by the king's attendants, to be looked upon, to say, oh, this one's pretty, let's take this one. She still went forward to the king. She still kept up her conversing with Mordecai, knowing that the people in the palace, one, didn't know that she was a Jew, and two, that now she's queen. She could probably stay in a room and not have to talk to anybody all day long. But she didn't. Her loyalty to and love for her people are what drove her. When you compare her motives with Haman's, he is nothing but an egotistical, selfish bully. Now, next week, we are going to be concluding this series. And it's going to be done in a little bit different way than we usually would. I think we're going to have fun. You guys might not. I don't know. We'll see. I think you will. But come prepared to engage in the message a little bit differently. My next steps for this week are to finish reading Esther. If you have not done so already, I want you to pray about what you've read. I want you to see if you can draw anything from it. Maybe what you see is different from what I see. Any one of us can read the same section of the Bible and come away hearing a different thing from God. Where I am in my life is not where you are. And that's part of life. And I think that that's one of the things that's so amazing about reading the Bible, is that one passage could tell me, you know, keep your chin up, you're doing great. That same passage could say, you're gonna be fine, God loves you, to another person. And I think that's wonderful. Now, during our expressive worship today, one of the things I would like you to do is come up. When you come up for communion, there are two extra bowls on the table. You might have noticed, you might not. There are little keychains in them. Now, these are the things that I said that my kids were helping make. So, you know, kids are fun. Anybody want to take a guess at what it is? Thank you, Mary. Boat, yes. No, it's not a boat. It's most definitely a crown. I want you to take a key ring. And every time you see that crown on your key ring, I want you to think about the courage that Queen Esther had as she went through what could have possibly been the last moment of her life, going in front of the king and saying, hey, remember me? I'm your queen. Let's, you know, come to dinner. I want you to think of her loyalty to Mordecai, her loyalty to her people. I want you to let that inspire you. I think that loyalty and courage are two of the things that we learned from Esther that it's just different for me, reading about Queen Esther and seeing, knowing how things were, especially for women and girls back then. They didn't get a lot of respect. You know, I stand up here in pants preaching. In some places, that's still not okay. The pants alone are still not okay in some places for a girl. I wish that I could take these and the message of Esther and her courage to those places where it's not okay. But for now, I can tell you to have courage. I can tell you to be loyal to yourself, to God, to your family,